Hey, friends and fellow students. Americans living abroad can legally vote in the U.S. election. You can register or get tailored support at votefromabroad.org. Look, state deadlines are super close, so don't waste another second. Go to votefromabroad.org now and find your state. Once requested, your ballot will come by email. All you gotta do is fill it out and send it back in. Don't miss this chance to shape the future. Don't delay. Votefromabroad.org.
My name is Yiran Liu. I'm a writer based in Greenwich, Connecticut. I've been around technology basically my whole life. I grew up in Silicon Valley. My father was a software engineer. And until a few years ago, I also was a software engineer at places like Uber and Google. A friend of mine recently came back from San Francisco and said something memorable to me. He said that it seems like everyone in SF is either starting or running an artificial intelligence company, or they're trying to fund one. And what did he mean by artificial intelligence company? You've probably heard of ChatGPT. It's the AI-powered chatbot that's taken the world by storm. It was the fastest application ever to hit 100 million users, faster even than Facebook or TikTok. And the success of ChatGPT has inspired a whole segment of young entrepreneurs to build startups and applications around AI. And many of those people are congregating in person in SF. They are throwing hackathons every weekend. There are newsletters that tell you all about the IRL events happening in SF, many of which are AI themed. And at a lot of these events, you're seeing some of the same faces over and over again. But what I was intrigued by was, who are these people, and are they just carpetbaggers jumping on the latest hype train, or is there something really transformative happening here? So this Sunday read is based on my recent New York Times Magazine article about the week I spent at a startup accelerator in San Francisco. What was unique about this accelerator was that all the participants lived together for the duration of the program in this beautiful Beaux-Arts mansion near Alamo Square. And the premise of the setup was that by having their meals and housing provided for, the fellows would be freed up to spend all of their time and energy and focus on building a successful startup. And most of these fellows were working on AI startups. One of my first days at the house, I was standing outside the dining room getting my food when I heard a man, one of the fellows, talking to a woman on the phone. And I assumed from the conversation and the tone that he was talking to his girlfriend. But as I walked into the room, I saw that actually, no, he'd been talking with an AI speech model that he was working on, which could assume various personas. And as we got to talking, I found out that this guy was previously the founder of a medical billing startup. His story matched what I heard from a lot of people during that week in San Francisco, that many of these people in the AI community in SF were second-time founders, experienced entrepreneurs, and they had maybe spent, you know, their 20s working on something completely different. But now they felt like the time was right from both a technical perspective, from a funding perspective, to be able to go back to their original passions of working in AI. Their youthful dreams of building an intelligence greater than ourselves. So here's my article from the New York Times Magazine, A Week with the Wild Children of the AI Boom, read by Emily Wu Zeller.
The Archbishop's Mansion in San Francisco, built in 1904, is now a stately hotel at the northeast corner of Alamo Square Park. Since February, it has been rented out entirely to HF Zero, or Hacker Fellowship Zero, a startup accelerator that provides 12-week residencies for batches of fellows from 10 different startups. Their experience, which culminates in a demonstration day, is supposed to be the most productive 3 months of the fellows' lives. Dave Fontenot, one of HF Zero's founders, was inspired by the 2 years he spent living in monasteries in his 20s. While monastery life was materially ascetic, he found that it was luxurious in the freedom it gave residents to focus on the things that really mattered. And at the Archbishop's Mansion this year, Almost everyone has been monastically focused on what has become San Francisco's newest religion, artificial intelligence. The AI gospel had not yet spread in 2021, when Fontenot and his two co-founders, Emily Liu and Evan Stites Clayton, started the accelerator. Even a year ago, when HF0 hosted a batch of fellows at a hotel in Miami, 6 out of the 8 companies represented were cryptocurrency startups. But at the mansion in San Francisco, 8 of the 10 companies in HF0's first batch this year were working on AI-based apps. And the lone crypto startup, focused on what happens to your Bitcoin when you die, was worried, they told me, about whether the investors who showed up at this spring's demo day would actually want to invest in them. That generative AI has largely supplanted crypto in the eyes of founders and venture capitalists alike is not exactly surprising. When OpenAI released ChatGPT late last year, it sparked a new craze at a time when the collapsing crypto and tech markets had left many investors and would-be entrepreneurs adrift, unsure of where to put their capital and time. Suddenly, users everywhere were realizing that AI could now respond to verbal queries with a startling degree of human-like fluency. Large language models have been around for a long time, but their uses were limited, says Robert Nishihara, a co-founder of AnyScale, a startup for machine learning infrastructure. But there's a threshold where they become dramatically more useful, and I think now it's crossed that. One appeal of generative AI is that it offers something for every would-be entrepreneur. For the technically minded, there is research to be done. For the business types, it's easy to create applications on top of the OpenAI platforms. For the philosophically inclined, AI offers interesting avenues through which to explore what it means to be conscious and human. And unlike crypto, especially now, AI is a more credible field to be in for mainstream techies. Its products have already achieved significant traction among consumers. ChatGPT is believed to be the fastest app ever to hit 100 million users. And some of the figures at its forefront are familiar faces, now in their second acts. Like Sam Altman, formerly the president of the startup accelerator Y Combinator, and Greg Brockman, formerly the chief technology officer at Stripe, the payments processing company. In short, you can't help thinking that, as one friend recently proclaimed to me, everyone in SF is either starting or running an AI company or starting or running an AI fund. AI, in turn, seems to love San Francisco back. During the pandemic, as tech workers went remote and Twitter pundits evangelized the tax benefits of being in Austin or Miami, the San Francisco area seemed poised to cede its startup primacy. But recently, that trend has reversed. There's a sense that if you want to be working in AI, this is still the place to be. We actually first considered doing the batch in New York. But when I went to New York and asked people what they thought of GitHub Copilot, an AI-powered coding assistant, people told me they maybe tried it once, Fontenot said. On the other hand, people in SF told me they were using it to write 50% of their code. Fontenot's anecdote gets at one of Silicon Valley's enduring qualities: the willingness, even eagerness, to embrace new technology. Out in the rest of the world, AI is triggering nerves, fears, and even predictions of wiped-out jobs, of existential doom, and endless commentary. In San Francisco, it has kindled all these things too, but also a question just as powerful: how do you get a piece of it? During the day, the Archbishop's Mansion often feels surprisingly empty and quiet, perhaps because it's so large. There are 4 floors and a grand staircase that winds up through the middle of the building, lit by a giant skylight. Many of the teams work in their rooms upstairs. Some teams work in the hack space in the basement, with its whiteboards and rows of standing desks. When I was visiting this spring, one wall displayed some ChatGPT-generated poetry. In HF0, the hackers work and play, with laughter and fun throughout the day. They're a community of techies with a heart of gold, and their humor and hacking skills never grow old. But on a spring Friday night, the one night of the week when the broader tech community is welcomed in, the AI party was in full swing. Fontenot and Lou bounded around the common spaces at the front of the mansion, giving out effusive hellos and introductions. In one back room, a bar served elixirs. The mansion is a no-alcohol zone. In another, an AI rap battle raged. It wasn't much of a battle, actually. While the AI is no Eminem, it was still destroying everyone. In a third, Jonathan Shobrook, a fellow, was demoing his product. Adrenaline, a tool that lets you ask natural language questions of your code base. He had the interface up on a monitor and a small cluster of spectators around him, seemingly riveted. "Can you ask it to implement ReLU?" Sasha Shang asked. Shang, a former software engineer at Facebook, is now working on her own app. In dyed pigtails and a baseball cap, she is something of a personality in the community. "Oh yeah, that's a hard question," Shobrook responded. On his keyboard, he typed, "Which neural networks use ReLU?" The right answer flashed on the screen, the cursor blinking as characters appeared. Someone asked how it worked. "I just basically chunked up all the files into functions and classes and groups of code, generated summaries of those code chunks, and then recursively summarized the file," Shobrook said. "Do you use an abstract syntax tree?" Only in San Francisco would people be talking about abstract syntax trees at 9 p.m. on a Friday night. Out in the main entryway, someone introduced himself as Bruno. I asked him whether he was in AI. "My first two companies were in AI, but now I'm in crypto," he said jovially. Fontenot came up from behind and slung an arm over his shoulders. "I'm not popular anymore. No one wants to talk to me," Bruno fake moaned. But he didn't seem deeply bothered by crypto's abrupt come down and AI's ascendance. Bruno, it turned out, was Bruno Faviero, a well-known investor and entrepreneur. He and Fontenot have been buddies since they met as college students, when each of them was organizing hackathons. After Fontenot left school in 2013, he dropped out of the University of Michigan, where he was studying computer science. He continued to run hackathons and networked in the tech world as Faviero built his first company. 4 years ago, he called me to say that he was raising a fund, Faviero told me. I was like, yeah, whatever, everyone is raising a fund. A week later, he calls me and is like, hey, the fund is oversubscribed. Do you still want to put in a check? If Dave says he's going to do something, he does it. Or, as Emily Liu put it to me, you show up to one of Dave's things as a friend, and 10 minutes later you're wearing a staff shirt. Fontenot is charismatic, a forceful speaker with wild hair. Like all good venture capitalists, he is a general partner in the investment firm Backend Capital. He has an unerring nose for the thing of the moment, be it blockchain or AI. That he seems agnostic about whether it's blockchain or AI, or some other underlying technology, is almost beside the point. In many ways, he personifies the modern Silicon Valley dichotomy between spirituality and hustle, between monasticism and flamboyance. His expertise, he believes, is people. We look for three things: grit, storytelling ability, and product sense, he said, describing the selection process for the fellows. Notably absent from this list, I pointed out, was a background in machine learning. Fontenot shrugged. This generation of startups doesn't have to come up with its own cutting-edge research. Big companies like OpenAI and Google will provide that. Instead, he said, the fellows need the ability to build prototypes quickly on top of the new models. And in fact, the unifying thread among the first batch of 2023 fellows was their experience at that sort of enterprise. The average age was 28, Fontenot is 30, and several of them were second-time founders. Adam Reese is a founder of Candid Health, which provides medical billing software. Emma Salinas founded an online community called Gen Z Mafia. While various fellows often talk about how they've long been interested in AI, it's clear that some of the why now is opportunistic. But if the people at hackathons and programs like HF0 tend to be newcomers to AI, this doesn't preclude their success. The consensus is that building things in the AI field isn't as complex as working in biology, say. You don't need to get a separate PhD in it. If you're already good at math and good at engineering and good at business, there are few limits to what you can do.
How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for The New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about the New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
A few themes characterize the sorts of projects the HF0 fellows have been working on. On the one hand, there are applications to automate tedious business tasks, like copywriting or spreadsheet wrangling. A company called FileRead falls into this category. Its law firm customers upload all the documents relevant to a particular case into an online portal. FileRead indexes those documents into a special database that enables users to search the documents not only for exact terms like truck or James, but also for broader questions like who made the transaction or what are the relevant cases. Under the hood, FileRead first fetches the most relevant documents from its database, then adds those documents to a user's question and sends the whole long query to the OpenAI Application Programming Interface, or API. FileRead then spits out an answer, powered by the same large language models behind ChatGPT. Without AI, identifying and crafting a legal narrative by piecing together textual evidence from thousands of sources is a painstakingly manual process. Most of FileRead's customers specialize in business litigation, including antitrust and liability cases. Sometimes they are paid on contingency, which means when they succeed, they typically get a percentage of the award or settlement, but when they lose, they get nothing. Firms need the AI to efficiently search for evidence in the documents that might, for example, either establish or refute liability. They don't have the manpower or the budget to do unlimited document review, says Chan Ko, a FileRead founder and an HF0 fellow. They want to spend the minimal amount of effort in order to win the case. Other HF0 fellows have been creating applications that lean into AI's seemingly human affect in order to tackle some psychological need. For instance, Brian Basham, who has worked in Google's brain division and since 2018 has been a life coach in California, is working on Thyself, a subscription service for guided emotional inquiry that currently uses AI and human coaches, but will eventually transition fully to AI. I met him and his employee Maverick Kuhn over dinner one night at the Archbishop's Mansion. After Kuhn waxed rhapsodic about a 4-week-long retreat he attended last summer, called Sleep Awake, I asked him whether the experience would have been as great if the facilitators had said and done all the same things, but been AIs. Probably not, he conceded. That would very much be a disembodied head. One-on-one life coaching from the current human-AI hybrid version of thyself costs $50 an hour. Once the service is fully automated, Basham expects to be able to offer unlimited sessions for $30 a month. At that price, he believes, it would be broadly accessible. A few days later, I did my first thyself session. Mostly, it consisted of the bot asking me to visualize scenarios, remembered or imagined scenes, and then to describe the physical sensations and emotions that resulted from surfing the emotional wave. I didn't feel much of an emotional wave, but I was impressed by how natural it felt to speak to an AI-filtered guide. Compared with calling, say, the automated hotline for a cell service provider, it was a vast improvement, although it did tend to talk over me. Evan Stites Clayton, an HF0 founder and a fellow in the accelerator's inaugural batch, has come up with a similarly intimate product, an AI assistant called Consort. To try it out, I had to go through a 15-minute quasi-therapy session where I was asked about my childhood, my relationship to my parents, and my favorite books. A few hours after my responses were fed into the AI, Stites Clayton, who was a founder of Teespring, now Spring, a platform that sells custom-made t-shirts and other merchandise, sent me a link to my consort, which I could then text. Over the course of the next couple of days, it texted me a daily message at midnight, reminding me to wind down for the night. On the weekends, it asked me whether I was planning to go out. The texts included appropriately casual spelling and lack of punctuation. I found myself warming to it, despite an earlier prejudice against becoming friends with AI. AI and emotional regulation might seem like an odd juxtaposition, but it makes sense that emotional labor, at the end of the day, just another form of labor, could be one of the first job categories to be transformed by automation. And yet, setting aside its effectiveness, there's something odd about using AI to manage our human brains when it's not clear that the AI brain is at all similar to ours. We're obviously trying to anthropomorphize AI, make it in our image, said Matthew Rastovac, the founder of Respell, a tool that lets you create AI apps without doing any coding. Because we don't really know how else to build and understand a new kind of intelligence. But I think it's much more likely that it's going to be like a reptile, in that it has its instincts, but we can't understand what's going on inside its brain and listen to its actual thoughts. We were sitting on the roof of Atmosphere, a hacker house in Nob Hill that he helped found. All around us, San Francisco was enchanting in the afternoon light. Earlier, he paraphrased for me some lines that he liked from season 2 of Westworld that spoke to how early we still are, and how blinkered when it comes to understanding this technology. Sanity is a very narrow sliver of the possibilities of mind. Because we have culturally accepted norms, we have a certain way of acting and thinking and speaking, and if you deviate from that a little too much, then you're at best weird, and at worst, clinically insane.
Hey, football fans, I'm Diana Rossini, senior NFL insider at The Athletic, part of the New York Times. I recently started the podcast Scoop City with my good friend Chase Daniel. He played backup quarterback for 7 different pro football franchises over 14 years. Our close access to football people helps us keep you in the know all season long. New episodes of Scoop City drop every Tuesday and Friday from The Athletic. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
During the week I spent staying at HF0, everyone told me I had to make it down to the South Bay for the AGI House GPT-4 hackathon. The organizers asked me to come after 6 p.m., though, so as to not distract the hackers before it started. AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence, a phrase that has come to represent a potential dream goal for AI. A machine intelligence with the flexibility to handle any intellectual task that humans can. AGI House, it turns out, is a $68 million mansion in the small town of Hillsboro, 25 minutes from downtown Palo Alto. The mansion has a long thoroughfare of ferns out front, a pool and a barbecue pit in the back. Rocky Yu, previously the chief executive of an augmented reality startup, runs AGI House, overseeing both its 10 residents and a raft of community events. He is warm and smiley and exceedingly well-connected in the local AI community. The crowd at that night's GPT-4 hackathon was so large as to render the Wi-Fi basically non-functional. Every room overflowed with hackers crowding around whiteboards. In the kitchen, Chinese takeout was laid out on a table. A smattering of investors were present to check out the demos, which started at 8 p.m. with short speeches from the organizers. The speeches were all variations on a theme. We are living in a momentous time. Maybe in a few decades from now, we'll look back at all these seminal AI achievements and see that they all came from this house in Hillsboro. As at HF0, the demos here alternated between business uses and personal applications. A chatbot that impersonates business gurus like Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team and a judge on Shark Tank, the business reality TV show, and that allows you to ask for business advice. Or an AI sommelier that will take your dinner menu and suggest an appropriate wine pairing. 6 months ago, any one of these projects might have seemed remarkable, but the arrival of ChatGPT has remade expectations. The one pattern I'm starting to see is that ChatGPT is the killer app, the technologist Diego Bosch has written on Twitter. None of the tools built on top of the API have been as useful to me. Indeed, if you are building something on top of OpenAI's API, it does seem as though your app's marginal value has to be extremely high if it is to avoid being bulldozed by either OpenAI itself or one of the big tech companies like Google and Microsoft, or even later-stage startups that are rapidly rolling out AI-enabled features in their products. As two analysts at NEA, an investment firm, put it in a recent report, generative AI may not be as disruptive to established businesses and beneficial to startups as previous big shifts in tech platforms. Unlike with the prior shifts, incumbents do not need to re-architect their entire products to adopt this new platform shift, the analysts wrote. In addition, this shift favors companies with bigger proprietary datasets, which can give an edge to more established companies. During previous tech eras, startups could introduce a superior technology or interface and then race to build market share before entrenched competitors could match them. But with large language models, incumbents like Google and Microsoft have had a huge head start in both developing the technology and acquiring market share among consumers. The situation risks becoming like that of the pharmaceutical industry, in which research and development is outsourced to startups, and many of the benefits ultimately accrue to the parent company. Moreover, the capital-intensive nature of training large language models means that smaller companies like OpenAI and Anthropic, creating their own large language models, have few alternatives beyond making Faustian partnerships with tech giants. This doesn't mean that generative AI isn't going to transform industries or eliminate jobs. Beyond the incumbents, one beneficiary might well be the indie hacker, the kind of coder for hire who does niche AI projects to fill specific needs in specific industries. Problems that have been too esoteric to solve, or workflows that have been too complicated to improve, might become easily automated with the help of ChatGPT. As the Gumroad founder Sahil Lavingia recently put it on a podcast, if I had a friend who's like, I want to make $200K a year, building something in SaaS, software as a service, building some AI tool, I would basically tell them to walk around their neighborhood, go to as many businesses as possible, and see what manual thing, what piece of paper you sign, and figure out how to automate that. That the era of VC-backed outsized returns might be coming to an end is, of course, a source of anxiety. Everyone in Silicon Valley knows someone who worked at the last generation of successful startups. Startups whose growth followed the proverbial hockey stick line on a graph and reaped the benefits. Who doesn't want to get their share, whether money, status, fame, before it all runs out? This anxiety is compounded by the fact that it feels as if the deterioration of the physical world is happening roughly at a pace with the flourishing of the virtual one. And the only way to insulate yourself is by achieving vast financial success. In some ways, San Francisco perfectly embodies this tension. AI is moving toward AGI, but outside the high-end tech offices, there is rampant homelessness. House prices are so high that even couples with two tech incomes can't afford to buy property, and children are sufficiently rare as to make them a spectacle. But the anxiety runs deeper than concerns about success, prestige, or even material safety. Change has always been accompanied by hand-wringing. And the pace of change in AI right now is mind-bending. The resulting mood is perhaps best encapsulated by tweets from Tiago Forte, the productivity guru known for a self-help system called Second Brain. "I'm feeling a broad loss of motivation for many projects and goals that used to excite me due to what I'm seeing with AI," Forte posted in April. It's not fear of AI apocalypse, or fear that I'll lose my job or anything like that. More like a feeling of grief that many of the personal skills and qualities I've spent a lot of time developing have suddenly been devalued. This, of course, is not a new kind of ennui. It has always been a bewildering experience to lose your livelihood because of technological change. Silicon Valley has just generally been on the right side of it. For the first time, such change heralds an era in which software engineers themselves may be less well compensated and less in demand. After years of disrupting other industries, Silicon Valley has disrupted itself. Back at the Archbishop's Mansion, 52 general partners from the Valley's top venture capital funds were in attendance as the year's first batch of HF0 fellows made their presentations at Demo Day on April 4th. A few days later, Fontenot posted a behind-the-scenes video of the event. It started with drone footage zooming in on the mansion, then cut to a close-up of Adam Riess, a fellow, jittery with nerves before his presentation. "Y'all, this room is f***ing stacked," Fontenot said in the video. "Sequoia's here. Benchmark's here. A16Z is here. Everyone's here. So anyone you would want to meet, they're here. And they're excited." He was wearing a pink woolly winter hat with a pom-pom, inexplicably, and he sounded like Caesar rallying the troops. 2 weeks after Demo Day, all 10 teams had received initial offers from outside investors, and some had chosen lead investors. Fontenot was optimistic. HF0's next batch, to be hosted again at the mansion, was set to begin in May. And as he was reviewing applications, he texted me, "The talent coming in now is insane." A few days later, I saw on Twitter that a friend of mine, Travis Fisher, would be joining the next HF0 batch. He and I last hung out in real life 2 years ago. At the time, the hot thing was the creator economy, and he was looking to develop tools that would enable people, particularly open source software developers, to monetize their work. While that effort in the end wasn't fruitful, last year he started a series of side projects in AI. These included coming up with a way for other developers to use the ChatGPT API so they can more easily incorporate large language models into their products. Travis no longer talks as much about the creator economy. At HF0, he is now working on an open source framework for building reliable AI agents that do things such as booking airplane tickets or submitting tax documents. But despite the shifts in theme, my sense is that what he's passionate about making tools for the open source community, hasn't changed. He has just found a way to come at it from a different angle. And in that adaptability, that ability to reinvent himself while coming out on top, he resembles Silicon Valley itself.